It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, joined as always by Philip Michaels and David J. Lohr. Hi, guys.
Jason, promise me it won't be like Hackensack.
This is a carnival, mister.
And you are a roustabout.
Yep.
What's a roustabout do?
I can't believe I'm working at some circus.
Till I find my place, there's no doubt I'll be a roving roustabout.
So, roustabout. This is season 6, roustabout. Episode 12. I never roustabout. Wanted to go France anyway. Roustabout. To go to France anyway, in which the episode is lazily named for the last line of dialogue said by the bad guy when he dies at the end of the episode. Great title, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this...
Why?
So, okay. Ruben Leder was never my favorite Magnum writer. He did write pretty much all the Luther Gillis episodes, but... You know, not my favorite writer. And this is one of the worst scripts I think he wrote. I think he wanted to write an episode of The Rousters by Stephen J. Cannell.
I owe an apology to that episode where they bring the circus.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because the rodeo to Hawaii. They bring this.
Because they're clowns. So it's all, right. They're clowns. It's upsetting. It could be any one of a number.
So that episode we called out for having a ridiculous premise, which is that, you know, first off, it's Higgins's like half brother who dies. The Elmo Ziller story, right? There's a rodeo.
Yeah.
And we joke about how you wouldn't bring a traveling rodeo to Hawaii because it's completely impractical. This episode does the same thing with the carnival. It is very clearly, and I wonder how many episodes of these 80s shows were really just taken out of people's pile of scripts.
Had a very out of the trunk feel to it.
Because again, the whole premise is, well, you know, the carnival's passing through town and Higgins has an old war buddy, but there's mystery afoot. It's like, they don't pass through town. It's Hawaii.
Yes. It came here on the rails that were underneath the ocean, and about 300 people affiliated with the carnival drowned on the way here. But the ones who came are really eager to do a carnival.
That's a super dumb. Higgins, this old friend, is named Inky, but he calls him Walter. Walter. Oh, I haven't heard that name in a long time. Oh, wait. He's like...
Not since 1942 in North Africa.
So...
And Walter / Inky is supposed to be American.
Oh, okay. This is our first thing that we have to talk about is it's New Zealand actor Clive Reville doing the weirdest American accent you will ever hear.
Oh, it's all over the place.
Especially when he says, the moment that made me laugh, like I cackled, is he said, "You can help me." And I was like, oh, New Zealand, you can't even do the vowel. Help. Yeah. Yep.
Clive Revelle is the original emperor before.
That's right.
Before they went back and retconned Ian
McDermott, right?
Ian McDermott. They retconned him into Empire Strikes Back.
Clive Revelle done a lot of. He's a veteran character actor. He was in. Yeah. I wrote it down. He was in Columbo, Heart to Heart, Dynasty, The Love Boat, Remington Steele, Murder She Wrote,
a lot of things,
Babylon
a lot
5,
of
Newhart, MacGyver, Dear John, The Fall Guy, Star Trek: The Next Generation. Oh my God, everything.
Not only was he in Columbo, he was in the last NBC Columbo. He was in the final episode of that as a very sympathetic Irish poet who's a killer.
And you know what?
It was a nice change of pace.
Could he pull off an Irish accent in that?
It was a lot better.
So here's the funny thing about Clive Reville in this. He's got this part. He's got a lot of dialogue. He's basically the most important guest star. He's Inky, Higgins' old American war buddy. Why did they not just make him from New Zealand? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And New Zealand fought in the war.
And this is the thing about it. I actually think Clive Reville, like, he's a good actor. And his performance here is good. His accent is horrendous and hilarious. But, like, I get, like, he's a good actor. I feel he brings actually some real kind of pathos and drama to this. Of course, his character is then killed off screen and never seen again. But, you know, he's good while he's there.
It's an ignominious death. And I remember the first time I ever saw him was in The Sorcerer by Gilbert and Sullivan from the BBC Gilbert and Sullivan plays. And he was magnificent in that. And everything else I saw after that was Columbo and Heart to Heart and MacGyver and Dear John. But, you know, put him on stage in a classic like that. He was amazing.
Good actor, can't do an American accent to save his life.
Yeah. Now we have 1942, North Africa. This is when Higgins and Inky knew one another.
Yeah,
right?
Again.
And I looked up, I was curious. In 1942, John Hillerman was 10.
Was 10, yeah.
In 1942, Clive Revel was 7.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was 12. I'm sorry. He was 12.
Is what you're telling me.
He was 12. I'm sorry.
Well, this is our Magnum.
Jeffrey Lewis.
Time. How does it work?
Seven.
Time. How does it work in Magnum PI?
Yeah. And Higgins's timeline once again does not make sense.
Maybe this story went in the trunk in 1972, and then came out again for this Magnum episode, and doesn't make sense because of it. Because it doesn't make any sense unless Higgins is older than John Hillerman by a good decade.
Oh, easily.
It doesn't really make any sense. But there it is. They're in North Africa and all.
But it's kind of interesting. We get to see a different kind of opening. We see TC helping out with the carnival and a stunt, and Higgins is just beatific looking at all this. And it just kind of gets weird.
It's a wonderful setting for a carnival too, because it's right seaside.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah, in heavy winds.
I would go to that carnival.
I got questions about the business model of the carnival. There's developer who is or guy with an option to buy it or whatever who lurks around who is a red herring and
like he'll buy the carnival
in
if
the
it
1980s.
Closes.
Investments in carnivals were really really hot. They were the real estate trusts of the 1980s.
And I'm sitting there watching Clive give this whole speech about maybe the carnival is not the thing to do anymore, and maybe Americans don't want that. They want their electronic arcade game places and
excellent.
All these
Missouri
things.
Accent, David.
Maybe we're dying. Thank you. And I try my best to help. And the it's a lovely speech, except here we are 35 years later. We are getting ready literally 100 feet away from my house for the county fair, which is pretty much exactly like Inky's carnival. And they do it every year, and they love it here.
Probably with fewer freaks.
Yes.
Probably.
Because no. Boy, there are a lot of, and I say this word affectionately, a lot of freaks on the Inky Gilbert carnival.
No little people, no bearded ladies, no geeks wearing hockey masks. Mm-hmm.
Acclaimed acrobatist / playboy playmates jumping off of TC's helicopter.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, that's and in fact she is our murder victim because she does jump off of the helicopter, but then is found stabbed in the back.
Not found. She kind
well,
of
she's,
bursts
she's
in.
Pushed, pushes
dramatically.
Out of the tent. Yeah, it's true. It's
but,
true.
But
murder.
Then it comes to one of the weirdest things where it just smash cuts to Magnum chopping meat at his coffee table, eating celery, and watching the Celtics and Lakers.
Yeah.
What the hell is he doing?
He's making, I don't know, steak tartare? I don't know.
Yeah, it's not actually doing anything.
Also, based on earlier episodes of Magnum, shouldn't that game be broadcast at like 3 a.m.?
I was going to say, it's entirely too... Maybe he taped it.
Maybe.
Well,
maybe
and I will point out that at least CBS had the rights to the NBA at this point. Mm. So,
yes, it makes sense.
They're watching Brett Musburger call the Lakers Celtics game.
Jack Whitaker.
So obviously, murder at the carnival. It's going to put the carnival in jeopardy. Oh no, Magnum! Can you please help? Says Higgins. He's like, this is my war buddy. He's like, all right. We learned that Rick could not be more happy to be involved at a carnival. Because Rick, when he was a kid, he ran away with a carnival for 3 weeks. So that's a great character moment.
He couldn't sit for 3 months.
I guess. Also,
it
one of the
feels
things...
like we should have learned that before season 6 of Magnum PI. But what do you know?
another
You'd
another
think
thing
that would have come in the rodeo
that,
episode
that I appreciate about this from a meta perspective is there are a lot of interior scenes that are supposedly in like tents. And they are just so like all light is blocked out because they're sets. And this is one of the sets like the inside of Robin's Nest. Those are sets. They're not actually in the building. Yeah. And they do it. They have little lights and for the windows and all that. And they fake it and they make it seem like it's there. This episode does not try very hard to make you believe that all the interiors are actually circus tents at the circus.
And it's super fake. Trailer
that's all. Super fake.
Has, like, you know, framed art on the walls and little carnival, like merry-go-round, tchotchkes and stuff all over the place.
They brought that in on the train from the mainland.
It's so bizarre.
Anyway, this is an episode where, you know, Magnum basically and Rick and TC join the circus in order to investigate the crime. Magnum is aroused about. He's supposed to be cleaning things. There's some creepy stuff. We meet some people. The chief, who's like a knife thrower, he's very angry because White Deer left him. The murder weapon was one of his knives. But then he ends up dead. Magnum meets the circus geek who puts on a hockey mask. He's obviously horribly disfigured.
Gus the Geek.
Yeah. There's a lot of trouble around this. Back in San Diego, a guy had his back broken. Somebody ate a chili dog and had to have her stomach pumped because she might have been poisoned. Lots of mysteries going on here.
And Inky has not been able to make payroll for quite a while.
3 weeks.
Which is difficult when you're in Hawaii because the cost of living, very high in Hawaii.
It's true.
I mean, maybe they're living on spam.
Maybe. So let's see what else is going on here. Rick has been up all night investigating things. Magnum, meanwhile, says, I had to clean out the tunnel of love, so then I went to bed. It's like, gross. That's really gross.
And it's 6 a.m.
But Rick learned nothing. But the Indian guy, the chief, was singing opera to the full moon, so I think he's our guy.
You're like 6.5 years into a detective show, Rick, and that's your reasoning?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. This is I can go into detail. There's a weird framing scene where everybody's going to leave the carnival, and it's literally framed
right
so that everybody's on one who's staying is on the left side, and everybody who's going is on the right side, and there's a gap in the middle where Magnum can kind of wander toward the camera, and it's just the most unnatural, stagey.
But then
shot
some
ever.
Of them migrate to one side or the other as they leave, which. But then why are they all dressed and ready at 6 a.m.?
I think the pitch here is I've got this episode in my trunk. I want to bring it out. This is Ruben Leader. He's got the episode in his trunk. And he says, look, I know I wrote this for, I don't know, whatever, Macmillan and Wife, some other show. But imagine.
Susan St. James has always wanted to join a carnival.
Well, imagine Rick and TC and Magnum and Higgins having adventures at a carnival. That's the sales point. It's like, oh, this is the one where they all are at the carnival. And somebody made a horrible mistake and said, yes, let's do that episode. And didn't read Ruben Leader's script out of his trunk, which is not interesting.
It's not good.
No.
Like, no. I mean, there's this whole thing where they wind up getting in costume to help out, and so Magnum is in the dunk tank.
Yep.
And then Higgins is dressed up as a clown, and we see him a couple of times looking kind of ominous as a clown, but it's clearly John Hillerman.
Clearly Higgins.
And then, you know, eventually there comes a point where, oh, it's the clown! And he runs, and Magnum chases him, only to catch him and go, oh, it's Higgins.
Oh, it's Higgins.
Why the did you run?
I think Higgins' costume can best be described as, but Doctor, I am the major domo at Robin's Nest. Very, very much like that.
Yeah, it's disturbing. It's very disturbing. Yeah, this is.
But I did enjoy Magnum sucking helium and speaking for a minute.
No, that was. Every episode of Magnum PI, I would argue, has its pleasures.
Yes.
And Tom Selleck sucking down helium would be one of those small.
Yeah, and
pleasures.
Then getting caught in a dangerous moment, and he has to react with his little high helium voice.
Don't do that, man.
Actually, I like the sequence where all the people who didn't get their paychecks leave. I do ask, by the way, like, where are they going? But they leave, and they're like,
the carnival on the other side of the island.
You're not gonna have
the chief was gonna
a
work
carnival
at that
today,
Portuguese restaurant,
and we have a contract, so I'm gonna have to buy out the carnival. He's like, no, we're gonna put on a show. Cut to Magnum's in the dunk tank. And, you know, like, everybody's got a job. They're all pitching in to keep the carnival alive. I kind of like that moment. That, like, we're all going to pitch in. That was not a bad moment. So
Rick is the one on the wheel that the chief is throwing out.
Throws the knives on, yeah.
I know I often mention Battle of the Network Stars on this podcast. But if you look for it on YouTube, there is a clip of Tom Selleck, the 1 year he deigned to do Battle of the Network Stars, and he is in the dunk tank and gets dunked in. He's a good sport about it. It's fun. Mm-hmm. It's good fun. And he's much happier about it there than he is in this episode, because in this episode, he looks miserable, but I think that's part of the character.
Yeah. So Jeffrey Lewis, by the way, is the geek Gus Zimmer, who turns out to actually be Inky's brother. And Jeffrey Lewis... Like, if you don't know who he is, you know who he is. He is a character actor. He has been in everything. And in fact, so much so that I knew exactly who was playing this part the first time he spoke. I was like,
Well, he had such a distinctive voice.
Yeah. Even without seeing his face, I could see his face in my mind.
Yeah. He also had the most beautiful crystalline eyes. They're just piercing blue eyes. And, you know, he often played villains. The first thing I saw him in was as the humorous sidekick on Flo, the spinoff from Alice. But then after that, it was pretty much all villain roles. Yeah. He was a sidekick in Clint Eastwood films. He was the villain in The Return of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. And he was the hot dog vendor, former PI villain in a Luther Gillis episode.
Oh, hot dog vendor. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Good one.
That's part of why they had to disguise his face.
Yeah.
But also, this is another thing that bothered me. You know, eventually when Magnum figures it out and he goes, well, what gave it away? Well, you're the guy wearing a hockey mask. Yeah. The hockey mask guy is always the killer. What are you talking about?
And he's like,
this episode
there's not even
angry.
A real revelation. It's like, yeah, all right.
Of course it's him.
He tries briefly. He's like, you know, who says I killed him? I don't know. There could be... lots of things going. All right, okay, fine. I killed.
It's not to kill. It's not to kill a mockingbird, friend. Where Boo Radley is falsely accused. Boo Radley is a killer.
However,
so here's another thing that bothered me even before we get to that. Right. So Magnum is like, well, you know, if I'm friends with Higgins and my friendship is in trouble, but you know, I have to talk to him and he has to see the truth. Right. And he goes and he's like, you know, Inky's doing stuff, and I know the money's coming from you to support the carnival, but, you know, something's going wrong, and I think Inky is killing people. And Higgins is just stone-faced through this, and he says, no, that's impossible, Magnum. Inky was just found strangled in his office. And they cut away, and when they come back, Magnum is gazing into the merry-go-round music box that Inky gave Higgins. Why did he pick that up? What possible, except for, hey, business. He's got to have business when we come back.
I get what John Hillerman is doing there, because we don't know it, but he's playing that he's shocked because his friend has died, has been murdered.
Yes, and that is the right choice. That's
but
good.
The way it's staged, it looks like Higgins has been hypnotized and is going to murder Magnum.
With the merry-go-round music box.
Yeah.
Which would be a hell of a twist.
It would be.
You have to admit.
Wouldn't see it coming.
It would be.
Yeah, take that, Ruben Lederer.
When we
just fixed your script.
Find out that the Shocker, the man with the hockey mask, is the killer. Fortunately, Audrey walks in at that moment.
So, this is the daughter of Inky.
So that
his niece.
Well, no.
Yeah.
It's Inky's daughter.
No, Donald's niece.
It's Gus Zimmer's niece. Yeah, right. The hockey mask man. So
Played by?
Anne Shadeen.
Alf's mom.
Mm-hmm. Alf's mom. All right. Adopted mom.
No, his mom.
Okay. Ooh, interesting.
You didn't see the episode where it was revealed Elf's parentage? Oh, man. He's half human.
That's why he wound up there.
Ah, yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
Let's see.
We'll save that for our Alf podcast.
He did a 23andMe thing.
So because she happens to be there.
Willie, I have some terrible news.
He can have a hostage, and he says,
I did a spit in a tube.
I may be ugly. I may be crazy, but I ain't going to no hospital, Hannibal, or, you know. Where are you going? France. All right, so this leads to a really stupid part of the episode where Tanaka is outside with Magnum, and he's like, nah, we're going to go in. And he's like, oh, you'll kill the hostage. He says, let me go in instead. And Tanaka's like, okay, Magnum, it's your TV show, whatever. Yeah. So Magnum goes
in. I've made a bond with the guy.
Magnum, I don't care. I don't care, Magnum.
And so, you know, basically Higgins goes in, and he sets the thing on fire, and Higgins
says, you're not going to take me, and, you know.
Yeah, but he drags him out of the fire again, just like he did back in 44, or back whenever it was.
42.
Back 42. The Inky and him did in 42.
It's very meaningful, except it's stupid, but yeah, it's very symbolic.
during the fire is when he does that. Yes. I never want to go to France anyway.
I never wanted to go to France anyway. There's your title. Yeah. It's great. Also, one of the things that I really appreciated watching this is that when they escape from the tent that's just been set on fire, there's a whole fire crew outside spraying it down, which I think might actually be the safety crew from the episode, and they just put them in the episode. Because how he just set it on fire, like literally 30 seconds ago. And
well, Tanaka is very thorough, so he calls in the fire department to stand by.
Just get ready in case something.
My orders, boys.
It's set on fire. Gonna happen. You never know. So that's this episode. It's bad. It was. I couldn't get through it in one sitting. I had to go away for a while and then come back to it. This may be the worst in terms of being unwatchable episode that we've done on this show so far.
It is possibly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there are bad episodes that I enjoy watching.
Sure.
And then there are Bruce Jersey written episodes. And then there's
It's bad,
well,
bad. This is bad, bad.
As another podcast says, there are good, bad episodes, and episodes you kind of like. And this is a bad, bad episode.
Yeah.
It really
this
is.
Might be a bad, bad, bad episode.
Which brings us to our next segment.
Oh, really?
Which is the letters segment.
Hey!
Oh, wait. I had a couple more things.
All right, fine. Okay. Oh. Hey, everybody. Oh, the letter segment's coming up later.
Oh, the anticipation.
I guess this
is that way I can be more excited when the letters come.
All right, go ahead.
No, watching this episode where a man is reluctantly forced to work at a carnival, it just made me think, God, I wish I was watching Roustabout, the 1960s Elvis movie where Elvis is reluctantly forced to work at a carnival.
So,
and he hates being there, and Barbara Stanwyck is the owner of the carnival, and her drunken boyfriend hates Elvis very much, and the daughter of the drunken boyfriend is all, oh, Elvis.
She likes Elvis very much.
And Pat Buttram runs the rival carnival and is sort of Pat
Buttram.
And Elvis is, oh, I can't believe I'm working at some circus. And this is a carnival, mister. And so, it's Roustabout, well, not the best Elvis movie, and really, best Elvis movie is kind of a low bar to clear.
Viva Las Vegas.
It is one of those good, bad Elvis movies where you sit and watch it and go, I'm enjoying myself watching this descent into madness. And instead of watching this episode, I would encourage other people to watch Roustabout, which I believe the last time I checked was on Peacock with commercial.
I think so, yeah.
Now and, Phil, I mean,
and by the way, the best Elvis movie is Blue Hawaii. Shut your mouth, David, with this.
I will bow to that. I'll bow to that.
Now,
I forgot.
Phil,
about
would
Blue
you
Hawaii.
Call Roustabout good, bad, or a movie you kind of liked?
I would say that it's good, bad.
It's good, bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's good, bad.
This is from the era where Elvis is still, like, active. It's not like Clambake, where his entire dance is, like, stepping one step to the left and one step to the right.
Let's not knock Clambake, because Clambake is beloved for its insanity.
Oh, yeah. No, it is.
Clambake,
it is
you just watch and
insane.
You go, what in the hell is going on here?
That's one you kind of like.
Yeah, that, no, I really
but,
like Clambake.
But you don't watch it for the dancing.
No.
No. Speaking of Roustabout,
yes,
we have another fan favorite segment, Into the Mouth of Magnum.
Oh boy,
where we have Magnum as a Roustabout with a bunch of carny folk. including a bearded lady and a clown and an Indian chief. Oh, actually, it's Higgins as a clown.
I see so many weird things. That's a green shirt on Magnum.
And, well, but he's got his overalls.
It appears right? that someone has become the Joker. I assume that's Higgins.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't have any actual clown
faces. Is that
faces,
Miss Piggy so in the background? Wow.
Oh, I wish there were a Miss Piggy Lego.
That is something.
Yeah, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally forgot about Blue Hawaii.
No, I mean...
It's because well, Viva Las Vegas is an earworm for me.
From a, Well,
from an Anne Margaret point of
well,
view.
Well, yeah, obviously. But from a just raw, competently made motion picture point of view, Jailhouse Rock is the best Elvis movie. That is a legitimately good musical.
That is a great musical, yes.
Without any camp or what have you. Whereas... if I had one Elvis musical to just watch over and over again, it would be Blue Hawaii, in part because it's lots of shots of Hawaii from the 1960s. And you've got Angela Lansbury being Elvis's mom, even though she's like 4 years older than him. And it's great. Clam Bake is good. Viva Las Vegas is good.
Yeah. Speedway?
No. No, any of the... with the exception of Viva Las Vegas, any of the ones where he's a race car driver are generally bad.
Mm.
The one that I really... they have half a good movie there is Kid Creole.
Oh, yeah, that is good.
Because it's directed by Michael Kurtz. Or Kurtz, right? of all people. And it's got young Walter Matthau as the villain. And, so many people.
I haven't seen this in probably 44 years. Can that be right? I still remember seeing Frankie and Johnny.
I have not seen that one.
It and scenes from it just stick out vividly in my head. I remember nothing about it, but I can picture it. And I can picture Deborah Wally as the love interest.
Meet me at the World's Fair, or It Happened at the World's Fair.
Oh, It Happened at the World's Fair, yeah.
That's a bad one.
Yeah.
Spin Out is one of the few racing car movies that I like of his.
That's a pretty good one. Change of Habit is abominable.
I married all three of them. I married her to him, and her to him, and her to him, and I'm still single. Woo!
And Kissing Cousins.
Ooh. Girls, girls, girls. I think my wife calls that sexual assault on the high seas. The really depressing one is Harem Scarum, because that is the one where Elvis thought it was going to be a legitimate spy movie, and it's all, no, Billy Barty's in this. You're an idiot, Elvis.
So was this just a ploy to let you talk about Elvis movies?
Yes, it's my backdoor pilot for
Roused About the podcast.
For my new
Phil, don't even joke about that, because a podcast that watches all the Elvis movies would be a great podcast.
I've said it out loud, I hope I willed it into existence. Listeners, if you are here, demand that Jason fund my Elvis podcast.
Yeah, I'll hand over all the funds.
Oh my god,
where we.
Hey, everybody, it's time for a letter from our listener.
Oh, my God! What? Someone wrote us a letter?
There were surprise letters!
Holy God!
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
here it is.
Anticipation had me, and then...
It's from Sid, who we read the last letter about.
Hey!
He says, Dear Magnum Podcast, OMG, which is, oh, my God, Magnum! I was pleasantly shocked to hear you guys waste 5 minutes on me. Friend, we've wasted so much time. It's only a little on you.
Oh, yeah. The rest of the podcast is just solid material.
You made my day removing...
And then you came along and ruined it, Sid.
You made my day removing my sadness and my motorcycle's battery going dead yesterday. I'm actually surprised you guys spent an additional few minutes talking about the Magnum remake. You guys were spot on. The casting is great. The team chemistry is fantastic. But I wish it was called something else. They could remake Hawaiian Eye and be Waikiki Hotel detectives. The show oddly does a good job in featuring more local ethnic casting. The ensemble actors are great. And that leaves Magnum with almost nothing to do. I almost wish the network would have found a Helen Mirren-esque Higgins. Perdita Weeks is a decent actress, but she seems really young to be a MI6 master spy. A random question for you gentlemen. You guys have occasionally mentioned Coffee TV20 and walking up Market Street to the SF Ferry building. How are you all connected to San Francisco? I moved moved to San Francisco in 1983 at age 10 and have been here ever since. Signed, Sid, our essentially one listener. By the way, it's magnum at theincomparable.com, listeners. You could also, we will literally read any letter sent to us. Yes. So
I just want to say, I have lived in San Francisco all of my life.
It's a lie?
No.
You've never lived in San Francisco?
No.
Phil and I have lived in the Bay Area for a good portion of our lives.
Off and on since 1982 for me, with side trips into Southern California.
And I've lived here since 1992. And I grew up in Northern California, but not in the Bay Area, but I lived here since 92.
But you surely know the KOFY jingle.
We've got what you're looking for. TV20 Stereo.
Wow.
Yeah. We know.
I remember the NBC affiliate from, because I've visited many, many times.
Cron 4 from the owned by Cron the Chronicle 4. For a while there. And then there was a weird thing that happened where basically they NBC was like, you guys suck. And they made a different TV station, leaving Cron to run infomercials all the time.
They went to a station down in San Jose, of all places, and said, you're the affiliate now for the entire Bay Area. You can't reach the North Bay, but you're now the NBC affiliate. Good luck.
Well, they put them on the cable and it didn't matter, but exactly.
And there was a time I visited back when I was in high school, and my English teacher said, there is this restaurant you need to go to called the Hippopotamus, and I don't think it's even there anymore, but we went and it was pretty good.
I've literally never heard of that.
Yeah. I think it's been gone for decades, but
sure.
It's like my one link to San Francisco. Cred.
Well, mm-hmm. as a kid, growing up in in rural Northern California, we got some of the channels from San Francisco and some channels from Sacramento. And so my, syndicated rerun TV knowledge was based entirely on what channels I could get. So I could get channel 2, but not channel 44, and I could sometimes get TV 20. There were shows that were syndicated on channels I couldn't get. And then when I went to college, I found that there were these shows that everybody had encyclopedic knowledge of that I had never seen or very rarely seen because they weren't on the channels that we could get up there in rural Northern California. So
like what?
Like actually the Brady Bunch is a great example where I didn't get to see that. And honestly, early MTV, we didn't have cable. We literally just had a giant antenna on a barn, and that's how I watched TV. So we didn't have cable, so I didn't see the early days of MTV. I was the right age, right, for MTV.
Sure.
But we didn't have cable. So other than Friday night videos on NBC, I didn't get to see music videos. I actually had friends who would tape MTV, and we would watch it sometimes in class, or they would give me the tape, and then I could see MTV, but otherwise I couldn't do it.
Yeah, see, we had in Florida, we had WTOG 44, Tampa Bay, St. Petersburg, and that's where I got all my retro TV knowledge. I mean, My Three Sons, nice. Brady Bunch, Hogan's Heroes, Mary Tyler Moore, all the Elvis films, all the Shirley Temples, all the Abbott and Costello.
Yeah, I had to glean it all from
Star Trek.
From Channel 2, which was where I got Star Trek, from Channel 2, KTVU, from Oakland, which came in loud and clear up there. But otherwise it was the network stuff, which is why I have the, just as David knows, because he also has it, the encyclopedic knowledge of a very certain window of time of every show that was on network TV, because I could get from Sacramento the network TV stuff, including Magnum P.I.
In the East Bay, I could not only get KTVU and coffee and TV 44, and I can still sing the Oakland A's jingle, the TV 44.
Hometown Heroes.
Hometown Heroes.
For me.
Hometown Heroes. They are on my TV.
Hometown Heroes. Yep. I gotta see my A's on TV 44.
Cable 12. Yeah. So there was that. But I also got the Sacramento station TV 40.
Ah, yes, Jess. Indeed. Okay.
We got what you're looking for, TV.
That was T20, but yeah. KTXL, I think.
I got KICU from San Jose.
36, yes.
Which indeed had Star Blazers, so that's where I watched Star Blazers each day after school. Hurry, Star Blazers, you have only 100 days before Earth dies.
That was Star Blazers was also on Captain Cosmic on Channel 2 at one point, which is where
I'm
I watched
sure that it was, but it was also on KICU.
Nice.
Now, see, I saw it
as
on...
was Top Cat. So,
wow, nice.
The two things to watch.
This is very far from the Magnum podcast, but it's okay.
Don't make us talk
about the carnival anymore.
I never wanted to go to France anyway. Sucks. So let's talk about things that bring us pleasure, which are Star Blazers and
I finally saw Star Blazers when, like, we only had one independent station in Tampa, but then somewhere in, like, I don't know, 78 or 79, Channel 28 appeared, and Channel 28 got all the stuff that Channel 44 couldn't get or didn't get, or, you know, they got stuff that they had to settle. So you had all the Tom and Jerry cartoons and you had various things, but they had Star Blazers. They had Wonder Woman reruns. Mm. They had, you know, it was sort of like this weird alternate universe of syndicated TV. So I got a whole bunch of other shows I'd never seen.
Well, anyway, magnum@theincomparable.com. Maybe you will inspire us to talk about Elvis movies or old TV channels or anything else. But, anyway, what we're saying is none of us wanted to go to France anyway.
No.
This episode was bad. And next week's hopefully will be a little bit better. I mean, you never know, but we can hope. But until then, I've been Jason Snell. They've been David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels. Bye, guys.
Clam bake. Clam bake. Everybody's having a clam bake.
Actually, there are parts of France I would like to go to. Normandy's nice.
Stereo.